This is part one of interview number 59, tape number 78, in the series Russian Mennonite Immigrants of the 1920s. The interviewee is Reverend Jacob D. Jansen of 33 Poplar Street, Leamington, Ontario. The interview is conducted by Stan Duick at the home of Reverend Jansen on June 6, 1978, for the archives of the library at Conrad Grable College, Waterloo, Ontario. This project is under the direction of Dr. Walter Clausen. Maybe I could ask you first when you were born and where you were born, who your father was, etc.
I was born the 2nd of February in 1895 in the colony Molochna. Born, my father was...
Which village was that?
Tigervadi. Yes, and my father was, like the majority of the Mennonites, a farmer.
Mm-hmm.
We had our own land, only 15 deciting, that would be about 45 acres.
Mm-hmm.
And, but we lived where we could rent land that did belong to the Mennonites.
Mm-hmm.
They bought the whole over, I believe, 27,000 deciting. And then we could rent every 4 years, all the land, anybody could run, the Russian people and the German-speaking people.
Mm-hmm.
It ran, was just like an option sale. And we had about 300 deciting in rented land,
mm-hmm,
for different prices. I know we had about 100 desetinen for $5 the desetine, mm-hmm, annually. There was a rule, the first year you had to plow, work it, and then the second year wheat, the third year oats or barley,
mm-hmm,
and the third year, the fourth year, barley or oats or corn.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you wanted to keep that land, you had to...
summer fallow it again.
Yes, and you had to make the government know, or all the Mennonites had that for rent. And if you wanted to keep it, you could just pay the same amount of money you had rented it 4 years before. Then it wouldn't go into auction again.
Mm-hmm.
That saved a lot of money, a lot of driving. Mm-hmm. And my dad, as long as he lived, when he rented land, we kept it as if it was ours, just paid in time the rent, mm-hmm, and it was stricken off the auction list.
This rotation of crops you were talking about for rented land, who decided that?
It was a written law,
mm-hmm,
a written law, so that the land would not go bad.
Mm-hmm. I was wondering maybe if that would still be something that would have been instituted maybe by Johann Cornelis.
Yes, it could be. It was how we had a Mennonite land. Well, it was our bit six.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Anyway, and that's what my father, he rented land even more than we could handle. And then he let other people, poorer Mennonites, work it on shares.
Is that right?
Yes, because it was a distance from our place, and my dad, he was a veterinarian. That was on top of his farm job. First born, he was very poor, and he was a shoester, was he?
Yeah, a shoemaker.
Shoemaker, yeah. He learned that profession.
Mm-hmm.
That is another thing that the Mennonites used to, each child had to learn something. I myself learned how to make the baskets.
Weaving baskets.
Weaving baskets or splice a whip,
mm-hmm.
4, 6, 8 strings, whatever, around.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that was another very important.
For sure.
Yeah. Well, my father, he died when he was 48 years of age. He had a disease the doctors couldn't recognize for a long time. And after a while, our doctor, Dr. Tavonius, he said that's a rare disease. Излечимая болезнь, that means you can, that's like cancer.
Yeah.
And for 2 years, my father couldn't speak at all. He lost his voice. He had a tool for Schiefertafel.
Yeah, a writing pad.
Yeah. No, with a griffle.
Yeah, with a blackboard.
Blackboard, yeah. And whenever I wanted to do something, he was in bed, and Jacob, I wanted to today plow that field and work
really. So how long did you go to school in Tiger Valley?
In Tiger Valley, 7 years in the elementary school.
Mm-hmm.
And then during the war, I took courses in office.
In the office work, commercial courses.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And in the commit truly, yeah?
No, it was private.
Oh, I see. So, I think that I would like to go on to the First World War. Can you tell me about the First World War? What were the first things you
our people? The Mennonites, most of them, the richer people, and they went out of free will, then they did pay.
Mm-hmm.
And they were more on their own. But I myself, we were three brothers, we didn't choose, but they.
But you were drafted.
Drafted, yes. I was drafted in 1915, 15th of June. And there we were distributed. The hospitals. The wounded were coming by the thousands. And when the first wounded arrived from the front, they were given money and cigarettes and whatever they could. But the second year, nobody saw them. They were not wanted. I myself worked as an orderly the first 4 months. But we had in our hospital, it used to be a woman's gymnasium.
Oh, a high school.
High school gymnasium, yes. And I was ordered by the doctor into the operating room. But the first few weeks he had more trouble with me than with the wounded. I fainted. I couldn't see. I couldn't stand it. Seeing those wounded soldiers bleeding, crying. There were two Cossacks, 18 years old, they were volunteers. And they were both left on the front on frozen ground for 4 days, frozen. And I had to be in the room and during the night, and they were crying, both of them, and hollering, "Mama, Mother, I want you." And you know, it was such, and then I was ashamed of myself. Now look, you have a privilege. You don't have to go to the front. You don't have to shoot or be in charge. And now you have to help them.
Mm-hmm.
You have to. There's no other way. And after the second week, I tried to not to eat before, but work and help. And I got so, after a while, I could help. And the doctor saw that I wanted to. And he was a very good doctor.
Did you?
Julian Mikhailovich Heyman, a very good doctor. And anyway, and we had 10 operating tables in the operating room. And they were brought in, and then one old wounded soldier, he listed something, and I said, "What do you want?" Is there somebody could write a letter for me? There were 96% of the soldiers who have never seen the school.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That was a very poor situation. And I told this old, he was about 50 years older than myself, I said, "I'll write you a letter." And since then, I had hardly an evening free. They found out there is a man. He writes letters. And for a Russian person, write a letter is so simple and easy. Say hello to my aunt. Say hello to my uncle. I feel pretty good. I wish you God's blessing. And just one style. If I wrote one letter, the next one said, "Write the same thing for me, except the name is different."
Yeah.
And
that's not funny.
And you know, I got so that I hardly got an evening free, but I did.
So you were working during the day on the wards, and at night you were writing letters.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Very many letters.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, and then our hospital was changed. It was rebuilt, cleaned, and renovated just for high-ranking officers. And then the doctor, he asked me to start to work in the pharmacy.
Mm-hmm.
There was certain medicines like Zinkzone, and we had that in powder, and iodine, and such rubbing alcohol. We got it in big quantities, and I had to fill bottles, put in every room so and so many little bottles with alcohol, iodine, and I enjoyed it. And then the revolution broke out.
How did you feel about the Tsar and his death?
The Tsar and his death I have personally seen the Tsar's mother and his brother, Nikolai Nikolaevich. I saw them personally. Oh, they were innocent, and sometimes they had so many fiends, you know. You cannot blame neither the Tsar nor the common people, communists, soldiers.
Mm-hmm.
They get one package of tobacco a month and 50 cents a month. And soup. And what is soup?
Mm-hmm.
What is soup? They had some, they were Greek Catholics, Orthodox Catholics, and they had all those, the church was always behind the Tsar.
Mm-hmm.
Always. And I know one old lady, a Russian lady, her husband died, and the priest wouldn't come. You have to pay me so and so much rubles. She had to sell her last cup.
No kidding.
That's the pity. And the soldiers, they died by the thousands. And of course, Lenin, first there was Kerensky, he took over.
Mm-hmm.
But it didn't take long. He had no chance to stand against those rebels. And the worst of it was where the woman. They are much more to fear than men.
Really?
Yes. They were so far away from right or wrong. Everyone was sick, venereal disease. And the Tsar, he was taken to Yekaterinburg. And when the revolution broke out, Kerensky was just for a while, and then there should be a vote what he wanted. And we had to go to that meeting too, in the square cluster in the city. And the first speaker was from Petrograd, now Leningrad,
mm-hmm.
Petersburg. He was the first speaker. He was an educated man, and he spoke, "Dear friends, we should be wise to elect a person that can lead us, because it will not be easy to keep everything going in this year big Russia." And what they did first, broke all the jails' doors, let everybody free. And then those that got free, they first started to kill the police. And the police just threw away their uniforms. They were afraid for their life. That wasn't in our town where I was. And this first speaker said, "Let us be wise and choose a man and obey. Let's agree on something. We are sick of this year, Tsar, because the rich people,
mm-hmm.
they have thousands and thousands of acres. And we are slaves. We get 50 cents a month for getting killed. And the second speaker was from Moscow, a real communist, and he started this way. I was standing with a great tall soldier at the meeting, and he clapped his hands too when the first speaker finished. He was wise, he mm-hmm. let us choose a man with who can lead us.
Mm-hmm.
And the second started this way. don't be fooled anymore, my people. We got Nikolai the Tsar. We got him under a pot.
Mm-hmm.
And he won't run away, but let him sit there. And all those officers, generals, who swore to die for him, they will singly try and in group try to free him. And we will shoot those away. Yeah. And that's exactly what he did. That's exactly what he did. And this soldier that I was telling you, standing with me, he clapped again. I asked him, do you know, friend, what you're doing? What? Well, this second speaker said so much different than the first one. The last one wants to kill. And the first one wants to have a ruler to rule us, help us get out of this here position that we are in now. But the second one won. The second one.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And if there's anarchy, nobody can really foresee what is going to happen. But that's what happened. All those German colonies, the old colony, Molochna, Zagradovka, everyone, not only the German speaking people, the Russian rich people, the officers,
mm-hmm.
They were shot by the towers. And I would never have believed it that would last 60 years since the towers. But I can not understand either how come that those that tortured us, they are dead a long time ago, and we are alive.
Yeah. Yeah,
we had to flee. We had to flee a country where our own government took the last bite of bread out of our mouth. And we are in a country where the government feeds us, gives us freedom of religion. I can't understand it, but I thank God.
Yeah, I can believe it.
I was even secretary after the revolution. I could, the Russian language, I could speak it, and my exam, my notes in the Russian language was higher than in German.
Really?
Yeah. I could speak perfectly the Russian language and write because I worked in the offices. That helped me. And I knew the Russian people. The Russian people, they have good souls. They are really good people. But if they are not allowed to say what they think, or they get killed. Now, I was secretary in our village, Kigavide. And there was a young man. He got married, he invited the communist commissar from our region called Halmstadt.
What time would this have been about?
That was in 1920.
Mm-hmm.
And this year, commissar of our village, he asked me to take care of this. Bogon was his name, this commissar.
Mm-hmm.
He was invited, and I really won't deny that I was a little bit afraid what will happen. Now the Alistair Jacob Weins, he had the solemnizers in the couple. It was Isaac Thiessen, and his bride, the widow, Mrs. Newport. Anyway, when Alistair Weins started his sermon, he said, let us stand for prayer. And then I stood up and he asked me, For whom are you standing up now?
It was this commissar.
Yes, commissar. I was afraid to answer, but I got up, and he got up too. But I thought this time it's wiser not to answer for whom we stand up, because he was a godless,
an atheist.
And everything went okay. Everything went okay. But in such a position, I tell you, I shook afterwards.
Yeah, I can believe it. That's close. What were the What was the relationship in general between the Russian people and the, or I should say between the Mennonite people and the Russian people they came in contact with? And
we had very good, I know because my father was veterinary, and the Russian veterinary from Takhmat, a big, very big place, Tokhorov, was a very nice educator, and he was and Mr. Weems was shot to death in our village, and he came to the funeral. He was a great friend of the Mennonites, great friend of my father, personally.
Great friend of the Russians.
Yeah, that was a Russian, yes, a Russian. And then he came to the funeral, he got into, on the wagon, and had a speech outside. And this are his words. I healed many, many sick dogs. I love animals. But if I if there was a dog with a rabies, I shot him. And these people here, the communists, atheists, they are just like a dog. That's what it is. And that's the way our...
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I see. Do you think that the people that were working for Mennonites, the Russian people that were working for Mennonites, were well enough treated?
Their bosses? There's going so many rumors.
Mm-hmm.
And most of the those people that condemn the
see, now I know that the Russian people were poor anyway, okay?
Yeah.
Were very poor and uneducated and so on for the most part, but
I tell you what it was. We had the Russian people working for us, especially when my father was ill.
Mm-hmm.
Mitro was his Russian name, Mitro, Dmitry. And he sang Christmas song, Vel ken jubel, vel ke kraje. And we were really good standing. And when we, our people came to Russia in 19 or 18, our Dorf Tigavari was built in 1822.
Mm-hmm.
And our agreement with the Russians was that we had free religion, but don't you try to teach our Greek Orthodox.
Right.
Uh-huh. Don't try to do that. So a lot of people asked, did you eat at the same table? We eat in the same room, but the table, the Russian workers, they ate on their table and they crossed there. And we did our own prayer.
And you didn't really even have any choice in that, did you?
No, we didn't. We didn't have. We was forbidden to teach our religion.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people say, oh, they just looked down upon the Russians.
Well, I
but some people probably tried to save money, but that was, they had their own holidays. Our, up until, I believe, March the 15th, they didn't get no faster. There was hardly nothing to do. But from that day to 15th of March, they get butter and bread and everything just as we had in Alton.
Mm-hmm.
And our house and our family, my father, he was a very, a believer, a very
devout person.
And when payday came, and at the end of the season, he always gave them 10, 25 rubles more than.
Than what he would have had to pay them.
But there was one trouble. They were very good workers, very good. But there was, since we lived in a place. Oh, I was going to show this map. And the government had a